Hello and welcome to the Barefoot Coaching Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. I'm Adam, and in this series, I'll be speaking to inspirational people who have made a change in their lives in order to make a difference for themselves, for others, and for the world at large. Expect real stories, insights, and wisdom from coaches and non-coaches alike. This is the Make a Change to Make a Difference podcast. My guest today is one of the most experienced and respected agile and leadership coaches in the world. He's an award-winning author and co-author of The Coach's Casebook alongside Kim Morgan, and he's founder of Inspect and Adapt Limited and the Agile Mastery Institute. He describes his job as helping to create great teams who create great products and services by developing a culture of reflection, empowerment, and engagement. A very warm welcome, Jeff Watts. Hello.
All right.
Welcome to Barefoot Coaching.
It's nice to be here. I've heard a lot about the new building my first time here, so it's beautiful.
Oh, good. I'm glad. And how was it walking past a framed picture of the cover of The Coach's Casebook as well on your entrance?
Oh, it's nice. I don't know whether Kim ever told you, but we had a big cardboard cutout.
No.
For when we had the book launch party. And my wife is, I think the best word I can use when we're being recorded is mischievous.
Right.
And so we went for dinner afterwards, and we took the cardboard cutout with us. And so that cardboard cutout was then appearing in photos in all sorts of different places because we took it with us. And that's been on the wall at home, but it's not framed and it's quite dirty and dog-eared now. So we probably need something a little bit more fancy like what you've got here, yeah.
I love that. I love the idea of you taking it away on holiday with you and just kind of propping it up on the beach.
Took it down to Cornwall, yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How fabulous. So I talked in the introduction about you being in the world of Agile. Mm. And for anyone who perhaps has heard Agile but doesn't really know what it's all about, before we get into talk about coaching, could you share a few words about what Agile is, who it's for, how it works?
I'll do my best. I mean, we could be here for a week. Ultimately, when I try and explain it to, you know, members of my family or something like that, I do a lot of work with organizations who are trying to change how they work from more predictive upfront planning to more iterative incremental discovery. So rather than try and figure out everything up front, do something quickly, get some feedback, and then learn from the feedback.
Yes.
And then along with that, there's the sort of cultural element of, in a complex environment where we don't know, you can't rely on an expert to tell you everything in advance. You need to get all these different clever people together and say, try something and use your intelligence to figure it out.
Yes.
So there's a lot more enablement rather than direction. If that helps.
Yeah, I like that. And you've reminded me that somebody explained it to me once in my corporate days. And I'm going to see how you react to this, because you've probably heard this a million times. But this idea of, if you want to build a car, you don't start by building a car. You might start off with a skateboard. And then you might look at putting a motor on the skateboard. You might turn it into a bike or something. And it's that sort of iterative process that gets you to where you need to be.
Yeah, so there's iterative and there's incremental. So if you know you want a car, then you don't see Toyota or Tesla building a skateboard.
No.
Because then you're wasting the skateboard. But if you don't know that you need the car, or you don't know how to build the car, and you want some value along the way, then just a set of wheels on its own or an axle is no use.
Yeah.
But a skateboard is. And it allows you to learn something about the process of building the car while also giving your customer value in the meantime.
Right.
So there's inherent waste in that. But if you don't know everything, then you need that waste to learn.
I love that. The idea of minimal viable product, and then discovering, figure out what works, what doesn't, fail fast, which works for people like me. I'm much more sort of wired to just starting somewhere and then just seeing where you go, rather than sort of perfection is the enemy of progress, as
absolutely
they say.
Well,
I'm very excited to carry on talking about Agile later then. But let's go back to coaching, because you were a trained coach before you found your way into the Agile world, right?
So trained coach, yeah, I suppose. When I left uni, I had a brief, very brief stint as a trainee accountant, realised that wasn't for me, and then got on the graduate scheme as a project manager. And one of the things that I was exposed to very early on was coaching. So we had, at British Telecom, we had an in-house coaching programme, leadership coaching programme. So I was trained, can't remember what it was called now. I think it was called a Coach U program or something. And that I really liked, just for whatever reason, I really liked. Can't really remember a lot about it now. But then it led to me, off my own back, taking the Open University, got a postgraduate diploma.
Right.
So doing that in the evenings and stuff and practicing on my guinea pig colleagues and things.
So, and you obviously enjoyed then your experience on the program enough to want to go and learn more.
Yeah, well, that was there was quite a big gap between then. So this was 2001, 2002. And then there was a lot of sort of soul searching, if you like. So I was trained in traditional project management,
right,
which was very much telling people. And, you know, I just seemed more aligned to this idea of coaching people. I worked for 7 years at BT and I didn't know how a phone works, let alone how networks work. So I couldn't tell people. I just didn't have that in my locker. Right. I tried to learn how a phone worked, couldn't work it out. So I had all these clever people around me, and I realized if I didn't tell them what to do and just got them to in a place where they could actually use their intelligence safely and confidently,
yes,
then amazing things happened. So that just, yeah, it was, I need that coaching side to my work to be able to add any kind of value.
I love that. And totally chimes then with the sort of coaching ethos of the person with the problem is the most qualified to fix that problem rather than somebody who is, you know, removed from it.
Definitely in a complex space, yeah.
How did you find the people around you then at the time? How were they sort of navigating that same challenge? Were they just telling, or had they cottoned on to this idea that actually there's knowledge and power, wisdom in these people? Let's try and tap into it.
That's a really good question, actually. So I'm going to answer a slight deviation of that first. So the first thing that came to mind when you asked me that question was my teammates. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was one of my teammates that said to me, Jeff, do you know what? You're not a very good project manager.
None taken.
And I thought, oh, that's a brave thing to say to someone who decides your salary at the end of the year. But he said, and that's a good thing, all right? That's a compliment. Because in our world, project managers are really inefficient and stifling. What you are is you're a scrum master. And I'd never heard the term. And he gave me this tiny little book and said, yeah, this is what a scrum master is. And I read it. And all of the stuff around coaching came back to me because it was around servant leadership. It was around enablement. It was around, you know, reversal of the pyramid, going back to Greenleaf stuff. And I thought, yeah, I probably am. But there's no such thing as a job like that here. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was me trying to do that. And I thought, okay, I'll follow that. So then I was one of many project managers who were all trained classically like me, but weren't quite as comfortable being different. So I was quite happy being the troublemaker, being the
disruptor.
Yeah, disruptor. And I found quite quickly that, you know, in an organization of over 100,000 people, you can do a lot without actually being noticed. Hmm. You can do a lot of good without being noticed. You can do a lot of bad without being noticed. So I ended up just doing what I thought was right, having to literally go into the pub with one of my internal customers and saying, what we're doing doesn't make sense, does it? You're not getting value. And we had this term, technical successes. So a project would come in on time, come in on budget, have delivered all the requirements. My customer was unhappy because what he decided 2 years ago turned out to be wrong. But that's what we'd been contracted to deliver.
Yes.
So what if we did something different? He said, yeah, but we can't. I said, but what if we did? And what's the worst that could happen? And so we just sort of broke the rules. And eventually my boss got a phone call from a colleague of my customer who said to my boss, we want some of that rugby stuff that you've been doing with Mike. And my boss said, what do you mean, this rugby stuff? He said, oh, go and speak to Jeff about it. So my boss said, what's this to do with rugby? I said, oh, it's nothing to do with rugby, it's scrum. And he said, well, explain it to me. I said, and he was, he was open to it, fair play to him. It was a kind of, well, so that's weird. That's not what we do. So no, it isn't what we do, but it seems to be working. And then, luckily for me, I suppose, we had a change at the leadership level. So we had a new CIO came in from the States who'd been doing this agile stuff in America. He came over and said, if BT's going to survive, it needs to be more agile.
Right.
So start doing more scrum. And the only person in the company who'd had anything associated with that was me.
Right.
So there was a spotlight. Okay, Jeff, now you need to tell people how to do this. I said, well, I've been doing it for a few months.
And at that point, had you learnt it from the book? Or had you undertaken training to...
Well, this is where my disruption thing came in again. So I was supposed to go on a Prince 2 project management course.
Yeah.
The company had paid for it. I forget how much it was. I think it was like £2,000 or something. Yeah. I wasn't looking forward to it, to be honest. And shortly before I was supposed to go, this is when my colleague, my teammate, said, Jeff, you're a terrible project manager. You're a Scrum Master. So, okay. So I looked up, could I be a Scrum Master? And there was only one place in the world that you could get trained to be a Scrum Master. That was in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
So I managed to figure out that it would be cheaper for me to fly to Boston and get a Scrum Master qualification than it would for me to go to, I think, Leeds and do a Prince 2 qualification. So I went to the powers that be and said, I can get a project management qualification cheaper. And as soon as they heard the word cheaper, they said, okay. So I managed to go to Boston, get my Scrum Master certification, be one of the first in Europe to get that.
Wow.
And come back and not have to go on my Prince 2 course.
Win-win.
Yeah.
This guy, the you're not a very good project manager guy, are
John.
You still in touch with him? John?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I haven't spoken to him for a while, but he did come up on LinkedIn the other day. He's not like prolific at it. He hasn't even got a photo on there. It's just one of those, you know, grayed out avatars. But yeah, he did come up in the other day, and yeah, he's just one of these really easygoing guys. He's just everywhere he goes, people like him, and he does a great job, doesn't really stir things up, just quite wise, you know?
Yeah.
I think the last time I saw him was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, maybe, and we went out for a drink and talking about the old days, as you do.
Do you think he realises the impact that having that conversation
Yeah, we've talked about it. Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be fair, he said, you know, if I hadn't given you that book, someone else would have done because they'd have noticed at some point or I'd have stumbled across it. But I think, yeah, he definitely accelerated that.
Amazing. John.
John McNeil.
Well, if you're listening, John, thank you.
Yeah.
So at what point then did coaching come into the mix?
Well, coaching, like I said, was always something that I was doing. So basically, I was once I'd gone on that internal course and then I was doing my Open University thing, I was put onto a list. I was put onto a list of leadership coaches within BT.
Right.
So anyone anywhere from director level downwards could request some coaching. And then they could just go through the list and pick someone that they wanted. I don't think there was anything like a coaching chemistry meeting or anything like that. It was just a case of someone wants some coaching, are you interested? Yeah, all right. Now, in practice, I was in the IT department. So most of the people that I was coaching were in IT.
Right.
But again, I'm not a software person. So they were outside of my team, which was quite nice. But I was taking very much a coaching stance as a Scrum Master with the teams that I was technically managing.
Right.
And then I sort of headed up the department after a while, and I was able to say, you know, if more of you want to do this, you can do this. I'll sponsor it. So we had quite a few people who are quite prominent in the Agile world now. You know, I sat here. Directly behind me was a guy called Nigel Baker, who's been a certified Scrum trainer and keynote speaker for years. And next to him was Paul Goddard, who I've worked with for a long time in the Agile space. So you've got people, just those three people who were sitting within, you know, 1 square meter of each other, have got, you know, close to 60 years worth of Agile experience and God knows how many talks and books between them. So
amazing.
Yeah, it was quite a hotbed really for Agile in those days.
Yeah, in the early days of Agile.
Because they were the first big company outside of the US that really decided to give it a go.
Right. And now, and I only say this from my own experience, it's something that's talked about in pretty much all, you know, medium to large organizations. Certainly that's been my experience anyway.
Yeah.
Gosh.
You know, one of the first pieces of what felt like resistance at the time was, I can see how this Agile stuff would work in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
At Yahoo and Microsoft and places like that. But we're a telecoms company. You know, we dig up roads, we put up poles, you know, we put wires and things. That's not software. So I can see how it worked there, but not here. But even cars now are mostly software. They're more software than they are hardware. Telecoms is digital. So most companies now, even if they make physical products, there's a huge element of software behind them. So Agile and Scrum are very applicable. And if you follow Agile all the way back to its roots, I'm not encouraging people to do it because it's quite dull unless you're a historian, but it does go back to car manufacturing and how Toyota managed to compete with Ford through Agile processes. So even in something as very physical and manufacturing and, you know, factory-based, it still has that applicability.
Yeah, I love that. So at what point did Barefoot arrive on the horizon?
So I had a coach, and I can't remember what specifically came up. I can visibly remember where, I can't remember the name of the building, but it was on the Thames, and I was having a session with my coach, And we were talking about my next steps and how, you know, I really, really, I've always had these two worlds of coaching and agile. And yes, they were getting closer and closer and more like an overlapping Venn diagram, but not as much as I wanted it to be, you know, and I really wanted to just invest in myself. And he said, well, have you, you know, do you know of Kim Morgan? I said, no, I don't know about Kim Morgan. He said, well, she's just won Coaching Person of the Year. Why don't you have a chat with her? So I had a chat with Kim. I came on one of the taster days for the PG Cert. And it was, yeah, the best course I ever went on.
Gee, and what year are we talking? Where are we now?
My memory's not great when it comes to dates, but I'm going to say 2012.
Right.
Maybe 13. I'm not sure.
Yeah. My immediate reaction was to go, well, that was no time ago at all.
Yeah, actually, 10 years ago
yeah. Now. My gosh. Okay. When you look back on your experience of doing the Barefoot program, what are your lasting memories? Are there any particular things that stand out?
The people?
Yeah.
I was saying how when I saw the space and what a great space this is for training, because we were doing this in hotels and this is an amazing space for the cohort that we had. And just the diversity of the group that we had from completely different industries and walks of life and everything. And they were using coaching for so many different things. And it was, I don't know, it just, we were there for 4 days at a time. Mm. You know, some people went home in the evenings, but most of us would stay overnight and, you know, we'd continue our conversations and pick apart the models and, you know, the practices that we had during the day. And it was just like a really, it was just a lovely atmosphere with amazing people. And we actually stayed together as a group after that, you know, after our third or fourth module. We would meet up on a regular basis, quite a lot of us, as our own sort of informal supervision group. And yeah, that bond, that connection stayed for a long time.
Are you still in touch with them?
We had a 10-year anniversary, actually, on Zoom during the pandemic.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was nice. Played a couple of games and a little bit of music and just to catch up, and amazing where people are and what they're doing now.
Yeah. I think there's definitely something about the intensity of the experience and how, as well as learning the tools, you're practicing the tools, therefore you're revealing things about yourself that builds or forms a relationship quite unlike any other.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you all got back together 10 years later. I hope that my cohort gets together 10 years later.
Hope's not a strategy. Someone's got to take the initiative.
That's very true. Yeah. So at the point you came onto the program, you talked about your overlapping Venn diagrams. I got the sense that you were wanting to bring those two worlds together more.
Yeah.
What was your plan at that point for how you would use these skills? Because arguably you'd already had a coaching qualification.
Yeah.
So what was the sort of mindset behind coming back for round two?
This is probably going to sound quite fake, and it's not, because for anybody who's been involved in coach training and coaching in general, you'll realise that serendipity is more common than you think. Mm-hmm. So I genuinely hadn't really made the connection until you just asked me that question. And I think that was the first step, really, that I made consciously to shift the balance of my work and my business.
Right.
And this might sound very self-aggrandizing, I don't know, but try and make a shift in the industry. When we had this new CIO come in and said, we need to do this agile stuff, I was the only person to do it. So I was kind of, I mean, forced is a strong word, but certainly strongly encouraged to teach people. And I had a crippling fear of public speaking, hated it. And I was then forced to stand as a relatively young person 20 years ago in front of people who'd been in the business for a long time, dyed in the wool, project managed, been in BT for life, you know. I joined at 16 and I was climbing poles and I'm going to stay here till I retire.
And you rocked up to try and help them see another.
Yeah, going to talk about Scrum. We're going to talk about enabling other people and letting go of your view that you're the expert.
Yeah.
Balls. I'm the expert. So, and it was absolutely terrifying for me, but I was the only person who'd actually got any experience of it. So, I mean, I got decent at it. And, you know, I went on all these different training courses to get my skills up and so on. But because training was seen as the way to do things, there were so many training courses. And I was, you know, going from training course to training course. So I was losing my, you know, hands-on stuff, working with teams that I really, really liked. I had less time to actually coach people. And I kind of just went along with it because that's what the company needed and that's what I was being asked to do. And I could see it adding value, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. And it wasn't having the impact that I thought it could. So the reason, going back to your question, I wanted to get back to more coaching and less training. But I didn't see how. I didn't know how I could do that because the demand was for training. The demand wasn't for coaching.
Right.
Even the professional bodies like Scrum Alliance, they didn't have coaching. They didn't have coaching credentials. They didn't have a coaching pathway. There was no role of coach. The Scrum Master was intended to be a coach, but they didn't have any kind of ICF affiliation. So I was, right. I was trying to get Kim to talk to the managing director of the Scrum Alliance. And eventually we managed to get coaching credentials in there and the coaching philosophy and the competencies and things. But back then there wasn't. And what I'm trying to do now is almost change the success that Agile's had. Because Agile has been very, very successful in getting awareness. Like you said, every company out there knows of it to some degree. And they've mainly known of it through some really, in many cases, good training, but very superficial training. And then people are left to figure it out on their own.
Mm.
That would be fine if that training gave them a blueprint that they could follow. But it's not. It's a bit like coaching. You can't. I tried asking ChatGPT to coach me this morning and it tried to follow the core competencies of ICF, but it was very mechanical.
Wow.
And that's the same for people who've been on a superficial training course. It's mechanical. It's by the book. It's not meeting people where they are, understanding their personal insecurities, their challenges, their goals, their motivators.
Yes.
So you only really get that through coaching. And if they're facing a situation where there isn't a right answer, they need to understand themselves. They need to understand their cognitive biases, their triggers, their what's driving them and what's driving other people. And they can only really get that through coaching. So that's what I wanted to do then, just because that's what I enjoyed more.
Yeah.
But also I think the industry needed.
Yes. And at that point, were you thinking you would use it in the organization you were working in? Or had you started to think at that point that there might be the potential for you to set up something yourself?
So at that point, I'd already set up Inspect and Adapt. I got to the point where I thought, if BT are going to be sending me around the world running training courses all the time, and if I'm going to have to run training courses, I'm going to manage myself.
Yes.
I found it very difficult to say no when I was an employee.
Yeah.
I found it a little bit easier to say yes when I was my own boss and say no when I was my own boss. So I had my own company, but again, the demand, what everybody was asking for was, I want a training course, I want a training course, I want a training course.
Just show me, tell me how to do it.
And coaching was still, I mean, even as a general discipline, this is one of the first things I remember Kim saying, is coaching is a very immature discipline. It's been around for a while, but not particularly codified.
Yeah,
coaching supervision wasn't really a thing there heard of. And it's still not in lots of places like the US and stuff. So we were really, it was very difficult to have those conversations with leaders of organizations to say, yes, you can send your people on a training course, but if you really want this to stick, if you want your people to actually be good at this, you need to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You need to help them understand themselves. You need to help them understand context. And yeah, I thought coaching was a big part of that.
The synergy between your story in being an early adopter of Agile in the UK and Kim's story of being an early adopter, the adopter of coaching in the UK, is only now really just starting to click with me, and how the two of you then came together to write the Coach's Casebook.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
I say, in coaching, serendipity is more common than you think.
Isn't it? Amazing. So you came on the Barefoot Programme, you did the Barefoot Programme, then what?
So part of what I was working through myself during the coaching on the course was a bit of self-confidence. So as well as my crippling fear of public speaking, which I think I probably still had then, there was a lot of people, I'd often say, oh, people keep telling me you should write a book, Jeff, you should write a book, Jeff, you should write a book. I said, well, I can't write a book. I barely read books. Through that, I thought, well, what's the worst that can happen? I was coached. And so I went away and I wrote my first book, and it was pretty well received. And
the title of which
Scrum Mastery.
Yeah. Available through your website.
Yeah. Probably some good bookshops and probably some bad ones as well, I imagine.
We take it where we find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was the first thing. It was, well, get some credibility. Prove that actually you can share some stories and you can reach people and you can normalize. So normalization was one of the big things that I took from coaching.
Yeah.
The fact that you're not the only person going through what you're going through, and just realizing that is really powerful. So
yes.
I wrote real stories of my experience of implementing Scrum, not perfectly, and put them out in the world. And the amount of people that contacted me and said, oh, it's just really nice to read that someone else has gone through what I'm going through and I'm not on my own, and there is the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's not a sort of Cinderella story of, do Scrum, it's really easy, it'll change everything, it's a silver bullet.
Yeah.
That was, I think, really, really useful in creating more confidence in those people who were within their organizations and didn't really feel they could validate their own experience and step up and start having more conversations with people.
Yeah. I'm taken by the slight paradox of agile being start somewhere, fail fast, learn.
Mm.
And then at the same time, this idea of people feeling as though they need to do agile right.
Mm.
Yeah. What are your reflections on that?
It's amazing how paradoxical we are in this world. You know, we talk about self-organizing teams, right? A culture of self-organization. The amount of leaders of organizations said, right, we're going to do agile. This is how we're going to do it. Self-organize like this. Well, hold on a minute. There's a little bit of a contradiction there. Can you see that? Mixed messages? Yeah. But you got to tell them, haven't you? You got to tell them how to do it. Nobody knows how to self-organize. So, well, how are they going to learn?
Yeah.
The other paradox there is where you get leaders saying, okay, so we're going to do agile and it's all about self-organization. So off you go. And people say, but where do we start? And what if we get it wrong? And you know, are we going to upset you? And you know, actually, what are the consequences? Just give it a go. Yeah, but. And it's like panic, like deer in the headlights, don't know where to start. And what we talk about here is supporting teams, you know, giving them the environment and the support they need and trusting them. But yeah, supporting them as well. So it's finding that balance.
Fascinating.
And yes, we're a paradoxical group. We've got trainers who are training the same stuff from 15 years ago. My course, whenever I ran courses, they were different week to week because new information was emerging and new stories were emerging. And
no doubt you'd have been pulling on the collective wisdom of the group as well.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think what that says to me is we're all human. We're conditioned by our culture and our experiences and our habits and the values of those around us, and what we've been taught over the years is right and what's comfortable. And so we try and solve problems in the way that we know best and we're more comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we've got someone who can help us see the mixed messages, see the incoherence there, which a neutral coach can help with, we just go blindly. We don't realize what we're doing. It's just a blind spot.
Mm-hmm. I'm also struck again by the synergy of what you just described there, in the role of the leader or the scrum master in creating a space for people to feel as though they can and want to self-organize.
Mm-hmm.
And the parallel to the coaching space, in that the coach's role is to create a psychologically safe space that enables the client to do their best and freshest thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sharing that because now all of these little fireworks are going off in my head and it's all starting, to make sense.
Yeah.
I guess that's the benefit of agile and coaching, or a combination of both. Yeah.
Well, I think so. I think a huge growth area for me with the Barefoot program that I went on was this sense of empathy.
Mm.
First of all, empathy for me, because I'm my own worst critic, but also empathy for others that I would previously assume were just out there to piss me off.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was taught on that was there are very few people in the world that are actually out there that care enough about you to try and sabotage you. They're all out there trying to do what's right for them, and they've all got their own personal insecurities. So a lot of the teams that I work with, trying to help them become more self-organizing, it's very easy for them to look outside and say, well, we could do that if only our leaders weren't so really annoying, if our customers would stop changing their minds all the time, and if we had the support of our management. They're just idiots. I said, well, they're probably not idiots, all right? They probably don't want the company to fail. I can't see a logical reason why they would want you to fail. So let's assume for a minute there's a rational explanation for their behavior. What might that be? A lot of these leaders have got to where they are because of how the culture has been. So historically, they got there because they know more things, they solve people's problems, and they've been the heroes.
Yeah.
But now it's a different world. And now they know they can't do that. And so they're quite vulnerable. We come in and say, well, we need to change the leadership. It's not about leading from the top. It's about enabling leadership throughout the organization. Okay, so where do I add value now?
Yeah.
Am I needed anymore?
Yes.
Does this mean we're getting rid of managers? And how do I prove my worth? And how do I actually get my own fulfillment out of this? If I like leading, and I like telling people this is where we're going, and I like solving people's problems. How do I get my kid? So these people, they're very vulnerable, and they don't know how to add value anymore. And self-defense, self-preservation is one of the most fundamental human drivers. It's not about necessarily preserving our life, but preserving our status, preserving our social standing and our own sense of worth. And it's challenging that for a lot of these leaders.
You referenced servant leadership right at the start. And from the little I know about that, what you just shared is resonating. What can you share in addition around servant leadership and its place within Agile, within organizations?
I would genuinely, hand on heart, recommend people go out and read an essay from Robert Greenleaf. It's called The Servant as Leader.
Okay.
And it's from the 60s or 70s, you know, quite a while ago. And I read it quite regularly, and it's still very prescient. Even though it was written 60 years ago, it's still very prescient. Now, the caveat is that he's talking very much around society.
Right.
So he viewed the cultural hierarchy of society being quite toxic. If it's a pyramid, then everyone's striving to get to the top of that pyramid. It creates dysfunctional, toxic behaviours.
Yes, competition, rivalry.
Yeah, when actually, if we looked at and flipped the pyramid so that, you know, everyone is creating more leaders who serve, then we get a better culture, better organisation. And I just find it fascinating. I can see why it might not have taken hold from a societal point of view, but ultimately it's around, you know, helping other people be the best that they can be.
Yeah.
And if we can achieve that, and that's our primary objective, then we will get some quite incredible results. It's slower, it takes more time, and it's a lot easier to give in to the just do this for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
All right. But I would genuinely recommend, I recommend this to all agile people I come across, but it doesn't mention agile, it doesn't mention scrum, it doesn't mention anything lean or anything like that. It is just about people, and it's a philosophy, all right? It's got holes, but have a look at it. And I've found it quite a compelling read every time I read it.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure to put a link to it in the episode notes as well. I'm keen to read it myself. I want to touch on something that you shared a little while ago, and that was the beautiful question that you offered to that person who had a perhaps an unhelpful belief about what was going on for leaders and managers in the organization, and how well or easily coaching tools translate into the world of Agile. Because what you were doing there was an exercise around beliefs. You know, what do you think to be true? Is it true? What evidence do you have to support it? Is it helpful? If something else were true, how might that help you?
Yeah.
So how easily do coaching tools, particularly the tools that you learned on the Barefoot program, translate into the work that you do?
Very directly. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but one, there's self-talk. So we're looking for more and more people in our organizations to take on more personal accountability and responsibility, to step up and step into this self-managing opportunity. And what limits a lot of people in that is negative self-talk. Imposter syndrome, people pleasing, whatever, their scripts. And so having someone who can help you work through those aspects as a coach, whether that be your scrum master or whoever, maybe it's just through self-coaching, through just reading some of the coaching cards that, you know, you've got, just challenging your beliefs about yourself and testing the assumptions that we have about ourselves, and trying slowly to perhaps rewrite a slightly more helpful script. So there's the self-coaching aspect of it, which I think is absolutely important, because if we don't have the confidence in ourselves to step forward, then it's all very well leaders saying, go on, self-organize, we're going to let you, but no one will do it. And then there's the coaching of other people. So the emotional intelligence, the assumptions that we have about other people's intentions, motives, and assuming that most people want to be successful, all things being equal, most people that you meet want a happy outcome. They want you to be successful. But unless we actually talk about them, unless we challenge the assumptions that we've already made, we just slip into our default scripts about other people. And change is difficult. It's not easy. And often we think about, well, all right, what do you need to do to change? But the person we can really only have most control over is the one we see in the mirror. So how can I help that person see what they might want to get out of this and align our motivations and goals? So yeah, it's a long, waffly answer, but I think it's incredibly useful, very, very relevant, very transferable. And if nothing else, just having almost a ritual of asking a few powerful questions every now and again, does an agile team, an organization that wants to become more agile, it does them a world of good.
And many of those tools can be found in the Coach's Casebook.
Yeah.
The award-winning Coach's Casebook, available from your website, from Barefoot's website, and on Amazon. Mastering the 12 traits that trappers, perfectionism, imposterism being two that you that you mentioned. Fabulous. We're going to take a short break.
Cool.
And then we will be back shortly with part two.
Nice.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Adam.
You know, I was thinking, there really is no single route to arriving at the Barefoot Coach Training Programme, is there?
No, there isn't. People come from all walks of life, from the armed forces to aromatherapy, HR to hairdressing, and teaching to taxi driving. But regardless of where they arrive from, they all share the same desire, and that is to make a change, to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether people listening want to coach friends and family, coach at work, or in a new career as an accredited coach, when it comes to coach training, no two journeys are the same. You can find out where the Barefoot Line could take you by visiting barefootcoaching.co.uk. Welcome back to part two. How's it feeling?
Good. Yeah, didn't realise that time went by so quickly.
Time flies when you're having fun and all that. Can we carry on the theme of coaching tools?
Sure.
And I'm wondering if there is a particular tool or series of tools that you find yourself reaching for most frequently. Be them either tools that you learnt on the programme or actually ones that you've adapted or even created yourself.
I don't know whether this is me being weird or whether this is quite normal, but I tend to go through almost phases, you know, where it almost seems like the need for this particular tool just crops up six times in a month or something like that. But I think there's probably a couple that I do come back to quite a bit. One of them is from the program, although I might have slightly twisted it. I'm not quite sure because it was so long ago, but we called it hot seat questioning at the time. And I'll do this with Scrum Masters, and I'll do this with teams, and I'll do this with leadership teams. And so I probably don't really need to explain it to the listeners, but from an agile perspective, being able to just put something out there, you know, for 60 seconds, something you're facing with, and then get five or six just one line questions that you don't answer and just gets you thinking, I found was really valuable for me as that person in the hot seat. Now, the slight twist is that we tend to use this as a way of practicing powerful questions. So it's as much a learning experience for the person asking the question as the person being coached. So they get feedback on how useful that question was, if it was too long, if it was a leading question, whatever. And they also get practice in tempering their curiosity. Because as a coach, it's very easy to get nosy in what's going on. And a phrase that I can't remember what I came up with or someone else in the cohort came up with, I can't remember, but it's something that stuck with me, is letting go of my need to know.
Nice. And
if I'm asking a question, trying to make sure that it's not because I'm interested, it's because I think they'll be interested. Yeah. And that is a really powerful technique for a lot of people who are trying to bring coaching into their day job, I find. So that's one tool that I find really useful from multiple different things. And the other one isn't actually from Barefoot. It's something I picked up and then tweaked from a TED talk I saw. So the original TED talk was from a guy called Tim Ferriss, and he was talking about fear setting.
Right.
Now, there is a slight trigger warning if you're going to go away and watch the TED Talk, because he does talk about suicidal thoughts.
Okay.
But he talked about setting your fears is more important than setting your goals. And so he thought, well, I want to do something, but I'm just not getting around to doing it. Why is that? And so he created a structure for himself to think through the challenges of what was behind it, and a structure to help him get past them. And like I say, I tweaked it. So the way that I encourage people to think about this. Now, this could be, again, a Scrum Master in an organization that wants to challenge the status quo. It could be a team that wants to take on more autonomy. It could be a leader that wants to admit their vulnerability, whatever it is, something that they want to do, but they're a little bit scared about it. So the first step is to list out all the things that you can think of that you're worried about might happen if you do it.
Mm.
So the leader wants to be vulnerable, admit they don't know, right? So they're worried that someone might think they're not a very good leader anymore. It could cause panic in the teams. Everyone thinks, well, no one knows what's going on. And they'll list out all the things that they're worried about. And usually it's not as long a list as they expect it to be. Because when we have all these concerns just rattling around in our head, we tend to catastrophize and we think it's worse than it is. But as soon as you try and put them on paper, there aren't that many. That's a good thing. If nothing else, you've got that. But then for each of those items in the list, there's three things that we encourage people to do. So Tim talks about two and we've added a third. So the first one is reduce. So what could I do? What's within my power right now that I could do to reduce the chances of that risk becoming a reality, or that would reduce the scope, the impact of it?
Nice. All right.
Even if it's just by 1%, how could I reduce it? And the next thing is to repair. So then it's assume that that risk does happen. What could I have in my back pocket to repair it? All right. And if it's, you know, this leader's worried about people feeling panicky, then I could offer them some other type of reassurance. All right. Or I could find somebody else who does know that can come in and I could ask them what help they need. I could provide some training budgets, whatever. So I've got a backup plan. And then the third thing that you do for each of those risks is reframe. Now, reframe is probably the hardest part of this exercise that I find people, you know, struggle the most with. But it's basically looking at it from a different perspective. So that perspective could be statistically. So if I looked at this objectively, what are the statistical chances of that risk actually happening?
Yeah.
If I take the emotion out of it, is it actually likely to happen?
Yeah.
Right. And maybe just reframing it that way is enough. Reframing it could also be the silver lining. Right? So, okay, maybe it's a bad thing, but is there a positive? So, yeah, maybe people do worry. Maybe people do doubt me as a leader if I show I'm vulnerable and I don't know. But maybe there's a silver lining that I'm now sending the message that it's okay
yes.
to not know. And other people might then open up and stop pretending and faking it when they don't really know. Maybe there's a silver lining. So there's that, you know, risk, reduce, repair, and reframe. And I find that a really good way of challenging our assumptions. If I was to take one question that I remember and really sticks with me from my coaching program with Barefoot, it would be, what am I assuming about this situation that might not be true? So the first time I came across that question was at Barefoot. It's something I probably still use every day. And that's a nice structured way of questioning our assumptions. So that's probably my two.
Brilliant. Yeah, really powerful tools. And I love the addition of the, what action can I take to try and mitigate the impact mm-hmm. of this happening? That's fascinating. I'm going to take that, if that's okay.
You're welcome.
I'll keep that one in my back pocket. And you yourself have developed quite an extensive range of coaching tools, right?
That yeah.
I was having a look on your website just recently. And a mix, actually, of Agile-related tools, but actually some more generic tools, for example, values, mm-hmm. and a number of books as well. Tell us a bit about how the products came to be.
Well, I suppose it's kind of a little bit of my people-pleasing thing coming out in that I started off because there was just no awareness about Scrum. It was a new role, Scrum Master. What the hell's that?
The rugby metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, writing a book about that gave some validity to all those people who are now finding themselves with this as their job title. And it allowed people to explain things and understand things in a way that was relatable to them. So that was the idea behind that book. And then people said, okay, well, that's great. But another really important role is the product owner. You know, this person who decides whether or not we go ahead with the project, decides whether or not we spend the money on it, decides what's important and goes in it, decides whether it's something we actually give to our customers. Like, they're a really important role. If they don't know how to do their role very well, it's all very well being a great Scrum Master, but it's going to be a terrible product. So having worked with a lot of product owners and a lot of product managers, I wrote a book for product owners. And then, but what about the team, Jeff? Yeah, what about this self-organizing team? Okay, they've got a good Scrum Master and they've got a good product owner, but you know, they have to work with each other. There's no hierarchy there, right? I can't just go and complain to somebody if I don't like you, Adam, if you've really annoyed me. How do I manage that? How do we become actually a team rather than, you know, a group of people who can escalate and cry to management? So I wrote a book for the team as well. And in between all that, we were looking at the coaching world to try and bring this awareness of the professional coaching world into the Agile world. So it was kind of a, okay, there's a need here, there's a need here, there's a need here, there's a need here. And then the cards were an attempt to, because books are quite heavy, quite hard to carry around with us. And the cards were meant to be a sort of condensing of the wisdom within the books. So we got those, and then the coaching questions cards. So from a Scrum Master perspective, how can I reflect on my role as a Scrum Master to become more competent and more confident and, you know, challenge my assumptions and give me some tools? So if they're feeling a little bit overwhelmed or, you know, stuck, they can just take a card at random and have a look at it. But equally, then we then went down the digital route and created the app. Like, I know you guys have created an app.
Yes.
So that they didn't have to carry 10 decks of cards around with them. And so, yeah, so it just sort of spans, and people say, well, okay, can we, what about some positive affirmations? So created some positive affirmations. And again, the data. So I've got a dashboard which shows me, you know, in the app, which ones are favorited the most, and the ones that aren't favorited the most. Okay, we'll get rid of those, bring some new ones in and see which ones people like. And yeah.
Fabulous. And I'm also struck by all the different hats that you wear, and that one of those hats is business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what your experience of running your own business has been, how easily the entrepreneur, the expert fits with Jeff, the business owner.
So if you asked any of my friends, they wouldn't be surprised that I'm running a business. So I nearly got kicked out of school many times, once for setting up a tuck shop that was undercutting the school tuck shop, once for setting up a book on sports day so people could bet on the races and sports day, all sorts of different things. Just, I come up with an idea and I'll go down to the cash and carry, I'll buy a bunch of juicy fruits and Mars bars, come in and sell them. I've always had that, oh, why not? Let's give it a go.
Yeah.
Idea.
Is it in your blood?
I think so. And so the entrepreneurial side of things, I'll just do something. So I thought, well, I'm going to go for the book publishing route, but I can't be doing with the whole I just want to do it. So I self-published.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to do that. So I found an editor that I never met who lived in America. I found a graphic designer somewhere who lived in Norway that I've still never met. And just, let's make it happen. So that's always been there. But until recently, so until maybe 18 months ago, yes, I've been running a business, but I don't really consider it running a business, because really it was, the business was just me. Okay, I had these products, but really the business was me. So I was doing the work, I was doing the coaching, I was doing the teaching. There was a period of time where I had a couple of big clients where I got some freelancers in to help me and so on, but really it's just been me. So when people say I'm a business owner, I felt a bit of a fraud there, because technically I was, but not like you'd think of when you think of, if you picture a business owner, you'd think of someone other than me. But last year, I think I became worthy of that title, because I set up a new business and I'm not working in the business as much there. I'm working on the business. So now it's called the Agile Mastery Institute. And the aim is to, might sound a little bit self-aggrandizing, but the aim here is to try and disrupt this Agile certification world. So people now, when they think of Agile training or they think of Agile certification, the thing that comes to mind is a 2-day course.
Right.
That's just standard. And you've got well over a million people, probably closer to 2 million, I don't know the numbers now. Let's say 2 million people who've got a certification in Scrum or some other kind of certification. But all they've done is go to a 2-day class. And they might not have said anything for the whole of those 2 days, but they've still got a certification.
Right.
And so if you're a hiring manager and you want to hire a product owner or you hire a Scrum Master, and you think, okay, well, they've got a certification. They come to interview. They've never done it before. That's not right. And I think it's doing a disservice. So while that's not something I did, because of coaching being my first love, if you like, I would say to people, if you want some training from me, great, but you also need some coaching. Yeah. I'm not making any kind of dent. And I'm making less and less of a dent, because there are more and more people than there were 20 years ago who are just offering training. So I thought something needs to happen, because otherwise the reputation of Agile, the reputation of coaching to a degree, because it's tainted, it's linked, is just getting worse and worse. So I've not got a messiah complex, don't worry. But I thought, if nothing else, I've got to give it a go.
Yeah.
So I tried to take what you would recognize very quickly as a, you know, almost a barefoot style approach to development. So there's training courses, but it's over time. And it's mixed with coaching. So instead of coming along and saying, I want to go on a 2-day course, now they have to sign up to at least 6 months worth of support. And it's a mixture of training courses, it's coaching, it's video learning, it's in-person learning, there's a smartphone app in there, there's books. And so it's a multimedia longitudinal long-term thing. And it's not just me. So I've got, at the moment, about 25 people around the world who I don't employ, but I license to be able to do this. Right. So they're finding their own markets. They're finding their own people. They're supporting their own people. I said earlier on, it probably sounds like I'm pretending, but genuinely not. When you asked me that question, you know, coming along to Barefoot was the first step. I didn't realize. First step in merging those two worlds really well. So the manifestation of that in this program is I've got the training. It's based on good practice. There's standards there, right? So anyone goes to any of these training courses, you can expect to get the same learning objectives. Right. But there's 5 months, 6 months worth of coaching where even if I ran a cohort today and another cohort tomorrow, that would be completely different because there's no agenda. Using this phrase that Barefoot use a lot, meet people where they are.
Yes.
All right. So what that cohort needs at that moment in time is what we'll focus on. Mm-hmm. As a trainer, not my agenda. I'm now in coach mode.
Yes.
What do you need to become effective in your role, to become competent in your role, confident in your role? And so that's a scary concept for most organizations buying training. And for those who are listening, I'm doing the inverted finger comma thing. All right. Because they want standards. They want, I want this. I want to know
yes.
this. So that's my mission. That's the hill I've chosen to potentially die on. Could be a career ender, right? So I've given up my license to train certified Scrum Masters that thousands of people in the world have been working towards for years and years and years and years and paying thousands of money to be able to do. I've given that up to focus on this. Could be a career ender, Adam. I don't know. Come back to me in a year's time. I might be trying to do a paper round.
Well, I love the idea that Jeff, the disruptor of the tuck shop industry yeah. all those years ago, is still disrupting, you know, through the work that you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are listening, and I fully expect them to be interested in what you just shared, where can they find out more about those programs?
So yeah, we call them Pathways, and it's all under the brand of agilemasteryinstitute.com. And it's a mixture of things. So you can do this, you know, in person, you can do it online, you can have quite concentrated programs, you know, days in a row, you can do half a day a week. It's quite flexible in that regard and in lots of different countries.
Mm. And for you, Jeff, if we look forward to 12 months to 12 months plus,
mm-hmm.
success for you would look like what?
So my goals for this year, so I'm working on the business, is awareness. So I want to have established Agile Mastery Institute and this way of training and developing people in the agile world. I want companies to know that it's a valid, viable alternative. I want there to be almost, yeah, it'd be a no-brainer because of the amount of great testimonials that we've got, so that I can go back to working in the business because the business is almost, you know, running itself, if you like. That's probably optimistic, 12 months' time, but certainly working towards that point.
And then what?
I don't know. I don't know, to be honest. Yeah, I think by then, ChatGPT will have taken over my job.
Sounds like there's a way to go.
Yeah. But I keep telling myself, I've got this vision, just being Jeff the coach, not having to worry about anything else, just focusing on the bit of my job that I really, really enjoy the most and not feeling a need to do anything else, create anything. I just want to be Jeff the coach in my little office somewhere, just one-on-one. Whether that'll ever come about, I don't know, because I keep coming up with different ideas that almost sabotage my own goals, but there you go.
And Jeff, as a way of closing us out, what's the thought or question that you'd like to leave listeners with?
It's one of those where I wish I'd done some forward thinking or I'd had some clever, witty thing to say. So I'll say the first thing that comes into my head, and I'm not quite sure why, but one of the things that I think I got from the Barefoot program, and as I've tried to carry through in my work and get across to people in my coaching, my training, my consultancy, whatever, is, and it's going to sound really cheesy, but be kinder to yourself and be more empathetic of others, because you just never know what shit people are going through right now. No one's out there to sabotage you. Give yourself a break.
What better way to close? Thanks very much, Jeff.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, then be sure to subscribe to get alerts each time we release a new episode. Just search Barefoot Coaching Podcast wherever you get yours. Oh, and if you aren't already following us on social media, then do just search for Barefoot Coaching.